Welcome back to the Cyber Matters podcast, powered by the Cyber Guild. Today, our host is Jamil Evans, President and CTO of Evanson Chambers Technology and Cyber Guild Board of Advisors member. He is joined by our featured guest, Megan Manavel, Director of Technical Product Management with Reciprocity. Megan is a distinguished educator, advocate, and influencer of the future of risk management and cybersecurity.
Good morning, Megan. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right, great. Yeah, it was great meeting you a couple weeks ago in town in DC at our Cybertunity meetup hosted by the Cyber Guild. I want to thank you for joining us and also thank Reciprocity. But I do want to start today talking a little bit about you. So tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, I sure thing. So I am in Southern Arizona, and it was quite a journey to come out there to DC last week. A little bit colder. I had to borrow a jacket from a friend of mine for the trip. But it's always great to chat with people, especially at different area or different paths that they've taken and different points in their career. For me, a little bit interesting. My first job out of college, I was hired in as an IT auditor. And I remember specifically my first boss saying people go into audit to learn about the different areas of the organization and find what they like. And for me, what I like was auditing. I know that sounds a little crazy, but I'm a spreadsheet fan. So move across the country after college, several kids later, I found myself still in the auditing world, but really starting to pick up on a lot of the cyber elements of it, the security elements of it. And I made a little bit of a pivot in my career to more focus on the technical security side. And now I am at Reciprocity. I lead the technical product management team. It's actually kind of interesting about Reciprocity. So I was a customer of theirs about 6 or so years ago. I actually purchased and deployed their product, ZGRC, and loved it. Went to another organization, purchased and deployed it again. So our little joke is, you know, I loved it so much, I came to work for them. But it is true. I really believed in the product and the vision of where they're going with our new product here, the Reciprocity Roar platform. So it was a really great opportunity for me to come in, bring my experience, bring my team's experience forward, and using that to really drive the next product and the features that we've been rolling out with our new platform. So little bit about how I got here. So yeah,
that's awesome. So it sounds like you took a non-traditional path into cyber. You didn't wake up, or you weren't born and went to school and said, look, I'm going to be a cyber professional. It sounds like the path you took was a great way to transition in. Would you have any other advice for other people out there that might have an interest in cyber but could use some advice on how to get in?
Yeah, I think it's actually funny. Everyone you pretty much talk to who's in cyber, they all kind of had that unique path. I don't think there's any one direct way of getting there. I actually was just reading this really great book called Reinventing Cybersecurity. It was produced by Jupiter One, and it's a collection of stories of actually several folks across the industry starting, who were folks like CTOs or, you know, risk officers or auditors or all these different paths. And really what I learned from reading the book and also reflecting back on some of my choices is, as you're moving through your career, if something interests you, a little gleam of something over here, or, you know, maybe something tangential, oftentimes that's an opportunity to really hone in on that. And so for me, it was, I got into it because we had to be PCI compliant. And then when I started digging into PCI, it was like, oh, well, what's this business continuity stuff? I want to learn more about that. And then that turned into, well, network security and network resiliency. And really it's about finding those things that you start to interest and making those pivots. Because oftentimes in the cyber world, that is that's common. That's acceptable. If you went to, you know, your head of security or your head of IT and wanted to know more, wanted to get more, they're more than willing to teach you and get you there. But we see a lot of that really in the cyber world and actually in the GRC world as well. Similar to me, kind of folks come in at that auditor level or a compliance level, And then really start to dig in and say, oh, well, this is, you know, maybe it's more of this, or maybe it's more of this technical side and things like that. And it's interesting. Everyone you talk to in cyber has a similar story, but yet completely different path.
Yeah, that makes sense, because there's so many different aspects to cyber. There's so many technical and non-technical aspects, and offensive and defensive. And mm-hmm. sounds like there are a lot of opportunities of ways to get in, for sure. So let's switch a little bit over back to reciprocity and the company. I understand it's a SaaS product company. And can you talk a little bit about the products that reciprocity provides and what they're for, and a little bit more about GRC?
Yeah, absolutely. So Reciprocity was founded in 2009 in San Francisco. Today, we are fully remote, which is why I'm here in Arizona. But yeah, we our original product, Zen GRC, we were the original folks who talked about how to manage multiple frameworks. So maybe you've got PCI, you've got HIPAA, you've got ISO. All of those have similar requirements. And so what we did was our Zen GRC application really focused on that cross mapping. How can you test something once and satisfy multiple requirements? Mm-hmm. And that was really a hit. That's why I purchased Zen GRC. That was what I needed it for. Now, over the years, lots of folks have kind of jumped on that bandwagon. The space was getting a little crowded. And we really wanted to think about it where it was, okay, we're cross mapping, we're gathering that evidence, but is that enough? What is that next big thing? Mm-hmm. And what's really cool about reciprocity and what drew me to the company was they were very engaged with their customers. So when they started planning the Reciprocity Roar platform, I was a customer, and they would go to their customer base and ask them, hey, what do you like about Zen GRC? What don't you like? What could we be doing differently? And to me, that just said volumes about the organization, that they really wanted to hit the ground with this new product that matched what the users need, what the actual customers needed. And so when we started developing the Reciprocity Roar platform, that's really where it came from. And the focus is now, you're already doing your compliance stuff. You know you have to do it. You're collecting that evidence. You're doing your assessments. But how can you use that information to contextualize it and communicate it out? And I think that's really the piece that as GRC professionals, that's the link we're missing. You know, we can talk about, hey, we've got five high risks or these four non-conformities, but to a board, to your leadership, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And so really what we're driving at with the Roar platform is, what's the risk to your business? What is the risk of not doing this or doing this? And really contextualizing it so that you're better you can better communicate what the impact is and then how to move forward with it.
Okay, that makes sense. I like that pivot and the expanding off of the base, and it's really important to help the rest of the enterprise and your partners understand where the risks are and how you're mitigating them. So that makes a lot of sense to me. So as your role, you said you are a lead product manager. What does that actually mean at Reciprocity? I know in general, the product manager is there to advocate for the customer. With the products that you mentioned, it sounds like the customer could be from different parts, internal, external. But what's different about being a product manager from a cyber perspective in your experience?
Yeah, so our team is the technical product management, a little bit different than traditional product management. But basically, like you said, it is we're the voice of the people. So everyone on my team has been a GRC practitioner. We've got folks who have been, ex-chief risk officers. We've got folks who have been compliance officers, or, the ones doing risk assessments across various industries, from U.S. federal, state and local government, big banks, big financial institutions. And so really what we do as a team is use our knowledge and our experience and our conversations with our customers and prospects to make sure that the product works for the user. There's nothing worse than saying like, oh, we've got this GRC platform, but then you get in there and you're like, but I can't do these things, So our task really is to make sure that as we're developing and as we're moving forward with the product, that we're staying true to what our customers need. And that's ever evolving. You know, I talked to a customer yesterday and asked me about something where I was like, oh my gosh, I hadn't thought of that, but that's great. You know, let me go get that in, see where we can fit that on the roadmap. But yeah. I think one of the things that I've also tried to do as we're building out this team is really focus on the diversity of the team so that we can capture the diversity of our industry. So kind of like I was saying, nobody really has the same path. We all come from different areas. So, you know, my team has, you know, multiple genders. My team has neurodiverse members. My team has non-English as a first language members. We've got folks that we try to, like we said, bring in a lot of those perspectives because that, like, everybody's going to come to it a little bit differently. There's no one size fits all GRC. So making it configurable in a way that will meet as many people's needs as possible was really important, not just to me and my team, but to reciprocity and our vision as a whole. You know, we want to make sure that we're meeting that diversity of the industry, and we're doing that through the diversity within our teams.
Oh, that's excellent. And that's, you know, that's one of the core tenets of CyberGuild is diversity. We really believe that it's important to look at diverse sources for talent to get into the cyber, you know, cyber realm. And otherwise, we're not going to be able to meet the demand of all the open positions out there. So, and it also, just like you said, just gives a great diversity of perspective that's really useful to customers and to our security as a whole. Yeah. So just a quick question. How many women would you say are on your team? Let me start with this, because I do want to get into the women question. But also I want to know how many product managers are there supporting your team and also more broadly at Reciprocity?
So we are rapidly growing, and I believe at last count, we had 4 product managers on our traditional product management team. And then my team has 5 folks on the technical product management team. And, you know, some of what we do, not just from the product side, but, you know, events like this, speaking at CyberGuild. So we kind of have that side of the house as well. So we work hand in hand with the other product managers as well, who are, you know, more of that traditional requirements and prioritization and that management side. So it's a really great connection there. So
that's great. Yeah. And I would have to say you're a leader there. What is it like to be a woman? Is it any different, do you think, or do you feel any different there?
Not at Reciprocity, honestly. I was welcomed with open arms. I think being a customer and being a vocal customer, I knew many folks, both at the technical side, but also at the leadership side within Reciprocity, and very much so we value those diverse opinions, having that diverse workforce. It's one of the reasons I think that they went fully remote. Obviously that was decision made before my time, but, you know, we're talking about that diversity and that workforce. You know, if you are only looking at the best talent within driving distance of your office, you know, are you really getting that best talent? And so I've seen in just the short amount of time that I've been here, coming up on a year now, I've really seen that be brought to heart here. Everybody's got a voice, everybody's got an opinion, and that matters. Certainly that is not the case for every female, or even in my prior roles. I think the biggest hurdle that I've experienced in my life was really being seen in a technical role. And I don't have a traditional technical background, but I have knowledge. I have, you know, over the years, I understand that. And I remember very distinctly being in an audit at one point. And at this point in time, I was the head of information security. I oversaw our network, our telephony services, all that stuff. And I went into an audit, and with my, at the time he was the director, who was male, and it was my show. I should have been running it. It was my department. And the auditor looked and said, oh, okay, should I work with your secretary here to get the documents, and indicating that I was, like, you know, just there to you know, answer that stuff. And it's a little bit of that, like, ooh, we've come so far, but yet so close, you know. But I think every woman you talk to probably has a similar story. I definitely see that changing. And I would just say to women out there who might be listening, and really anybody out there who's in an underrepresented group, whether it's, you know, neurodiversity, ethnicity, gender, whatever that may be, don't accept that as an answer. If you sit back and let someone call you the secretary, everyone's going to call you the secretary. Mm. And maybe you aren't comfortable speaking up, and you're not necessarily like, I'm very outspoken. I'm just going to call it out. I will call out when I see it. I will call it out even if it doesn't impact me. But some folks aren't comfortable with that. And so I would just say, find somebody who is comfortable to help you be your voice, because it can be very intimidating, but there are women out there, there are people out there who support you. I'll support you, you know, reach out to me, find me on LinkedIn. I will help you, but don't accept that type of behavior, because tolerating it is basically saying that it's okay. And we don't want that. You know, we want to break that stigma.
Well, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. I'm really glad you shared that perspective here. So, all right, switching over to risk. And when you joined us 2 weeks ago, one of the most lively discussions kicked off when we started talking about how to talk risk so that your customers or your board or your executives will listen. And so I'm going to give a fictitious scenario here. I'm running a fintech product company. Mm-hmm. And so I've got PII data, I've got financial data. So I've got a lot of private information there. And, you know, I'm realizing that my customers will not buy my product unless I am SOC 2 certified. And I've got to follow GDPR. I know I've got to follow CCPA. I may be wanting to go after state rep because I've got some state customers. And so that's a lot for me. I mean, I'm looking just to build a product here. I don't really want to do all this compliance work, but I feel like by doing that, I'm increasing my risk resilience. So I'm probably a little less risky. Isn't that enough? I mean, is completing those compliance exercises enough to keep me safe?
I think on the surface, yes. I think it'll appease your customers. That's actually, I think, one of the number one reasons why people go for a SOC 2 and get those reports is as a sales tool, because it's recognized in the industry that if you've gone through the SOC 2 process, your controls have been independently validated, and you're safer, right? You're less risky than the option that doesn't have a SOC 2. And yes, that is true. You are safer than somebody who maybe doesn't have as strong compliance. But I always like to think of that of if you're only looking at it that one time, or if you're only looking at it at that narrow scope, then you're really not achieving the goal of compliance. Because the purpose of doing compliance activities isn't just to be compliant. Like, your goal shouldn't just be to get a SOC 2 report. Mm-hmm. The reason we do compliance activities is, like you said, we want to reduce the risk. So if you're looking at it once a year, then at that point in time, sure, your risk is sufficiently mitigated and everything's great. But tomorrow, something could change. Next week, something could change. And the longer you go in between validating and collecting evidence, the higher your risk is. We call that sure. inverse relationship between control effectiveness and residual risk. The more effective your controls, lower your risk. Of course, then less effective your controls, the higher your risk. And that's the piece where I think it's actually giving your board that false sense of security, or your leadership, whoever you report to, your customers. You're saying, yeah, we did this audit and we were great, but that's about it. And that's really where we are pivoting with the Reciprocity Roar platform, is to say, you have to do compliance, right? You got to get that SOC 2. Your head of sales wants to go out there and sell. But how can you use that SOC 2 or that compliance program to, you know, continue that conversation, looking at your areas of high risk, you know, continuously assessing that evidence? That's really where we need to push through, you know, as an industry. And I think that's that when we started having that conversation, that's when, like you said, it really got lively, because people were like, oh yeah. And what about this? And what about this? And it's like, yeah, that's the conversations we want to be having. And I think I used the analogy when we were there, but, you know, you mentioned that there, you know, we've got PII, we've got, you know, whatever kind of data. that's really where you need to focus your risk reduction is what's important to you. Mm-hmm. For you, it might be data. It might be your critical infrastructure. It, you know, it might be, you know, your cloud providers and your supply chains and things like that. Focusing in on those targeted areas and consistently assessing that risk is really when you're going to be able to then have those conversations in real time and communicate and say, hey, there's a real issue here with our data privacy. There's a real risk that we could be breached. But here's a couple of controls that we can implement. And if we up these controls, if we get these things in place, now that risk is going to go down. And that's the conversations we need to be having as a profession, as an industry. It's, you know, going in there and saying, hey, we did SOC 2. We have these 5 nonconformities. We should probably fix them. That's not going to get you anywhere. But contextualizing it so that you can speak their language, speak that board's language, that stakeholder's language, that's where those conversations become powerful.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm still representing a fictitious stakeholder here, or yes, a fintech owner. And that makes sense to me. You know, I spent all this money to get that SOC 2 compliance and it's checked. And I know next year I'm going to have to do it again. And so, yeah, I spent all that time and money. I might as well just take another step after that and actually leverage that same data, that, you know, take that one step further so that I can actually tie that to what are my critical assets, right? I think that's what you're saying. Yeah.
Exactly.
That makes sense. I mean, one of the other things that came up and is also a big question is what's the ROI, right? Like, I get that I can put money into R&D, I can put money into new features in my product, but to go that extra step to put in place for some risk management here, is that really giving me ROI? Mm-hmm. What's your thought to that question?
And that's always the question, right? It's always about the dollar value. And that's really where I think it can get really complicated. But if you have, you know, an application or a tool that can assist, that can become very valuable. And so one of the things that our platform actually is built off of are those control risk relationships, but using them in a mathematical way. So how effective is your control on a percentage scale, right? Is it 100% effective? Everything's perfect. Are there a few issues and maybe it's only 50% effective? Looking at that numerically, and then what's the impact? What's the weight of that control? You know, not every control is going to do the same thing or reduce the risk enough. Mm-hmm. And especially, like, let's use data as an example, right? If we talk about the average cost of a breach, and you can actually get that data right down to your industry, to your record types, things like that, and utilize that with your effectiveness percentages, with your weights, to be able to calculate out, like, this is the financial impact. This amount of revenue is at risk. Mm. It's not going to be perfect, right? It's not always going to be there, but tying it back to revenue, tying it back to, we could lose money if we don't do this, and this is maybe a small amount of money to spend here will increase our control effectiveness and thereby reduce this much risk. That's where those connectivities really start to come in handy. And when you have, you know, the algorithm behind the scenes that can do that for you, just by marking a control as effective, everything else downstream is going to immediately identify the riskiest areas and where you should be investing that money.
Excellent. All right. So let's look forward to 2023 next year. What do you think is in store for 2023 from a cyber perspective? What should we be focusing in on?
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting. We look back a little bit, we look at 2022 and some of the things that have happened, and my favorite, if you will, maybe least favorite incident that I reviewed actually happened to do with Uber. Of course, we all know the nitty gritty details and stuff. But the thing that I found most interesting, and it really like solidified this in my mind, is that Uber was ISO 27001 certified. They had gone through the process. They had that certificate. They're audited every year, right? Yet they still had an incident. And that's like the perfect example of that false sense of security. Mm-hmm. You go through, you do your audit, you think you're good. Then an incident happens and immediately your leadership, your customers, everybody is like, well, what are you talking about? You had this certification. You clearly, you know, were secure. But it's not, right? Security does not equal compliance. And so what I see going forward in 2023 is the biggest risk to all of us is how we're managing risk. And we as an industry really need to step it up and realize that audits and compliance aren't enough to reduce risk. We really have to evaluate what we're doing, how we're calculating it, and how we're communicating it. Because that's really how you get that stigma of you know, oh, security's a bummer, or audit's a bummer. They're going to come in and tell us what to do. But break that image and really get to a point where you can communicate in a way that you're a business enabler. You're not the naysayer. And it's going to be hard for some folks. A lot of times, you know, you have those tried and true traditional methods and they work and you think you're great. And then you're Uber and you end up on the front page of the New York Times. And that's, you know, what we all really want to avoid. And so reevaluating not just our internal compliance, third-party risk is a huge, huge issue as well. We've seen a lot of, I believe there was an executive order, a lot of new guidance that's been coming out last year related to your supply chain. And I think that's a key area too, that we have to look at how we're managing our third parties might actually be a bigger risk than simply just the third parties themselves. Because it's a very similar process. You go in annually, you check your boxes and you say, yep, this vendor looks good. See you in a year, you know, see you next contract renewal. And that's just as bad, for lack of a better word, as check the box compliance internally. And we really need to recognize that some of these processes that we've loved and lived for the last X amount of years just aren't enough anymore. And in order to really reduce the risk and really move forward, we have to evaluate those processes. And so that's really my biggest advice for 2023 is let's look at those processes. Let's see where we can find some improvements and add some additional either continuous collection or more often utilizing numerics is always great. No one likes to say like, oh, this is high risk. Sure. What does high risk mean? But no, bring it back to data and, you know, contextualizing it back to we could lose X amount of revenue if we moved forward with this, you know, vendor or this project or this process, whatever that looks like.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I see some of the same things for next year, especially this third party risk. And it's, you know, it strikes me that our adversaries or, you know, the threat actors out there are always evolving. They're always trying new things. They're always continuous. So it makes sense what you're saying that we do need to be continuous on this side. If we're not, then it gives them an advantage, really. Are there any other ways that you can suggest to really get that point across to stakeholders again? I'm bringing it back there. You know, one of the things that strikes me is knowledge. I mean, it seems like almost every day I'm hearing about a new breach and companies that you might think, oh, that happens to those companies. It doesn't really happen to me. And it seems like knowledge is really a really big forcing factor to, or at least a way to get, you know, people to actually take this seriously. Do you have any other suggestions for that?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because you're right. There's news out there, there's information out there. And I kind of see it as it's a good thing and a bad thing. There's kind of different stakeholders, different boards, how they're going to react. And some of them it's, you know, I don't want to know, like, just tell me everything's good. You know, we got our SOC report. Okay, moving on. There's some that are, you know, they want to dig in, right? Oh, I saw this breach or I saw this. Could we be next? And they want that level of detail. And I think we as GRC professionals need to meet them in the middle and really identify how to best communicate with them. And I'm going to bring it to a personal level for a minute. I'm a mom, right? And especially when your kids are younger, sometimes you have to find their currency, as my husband calls it, or find their leverage, what's important to them. And, you know, when they're younger, maybe it's their iPad, right? So, hey, you don't clean your room, you don't get iPad time. So little things like that. But it's true as adults, right? Everybody has something that they care about or understand. And that language is generally your business, right? Everybody works for the same company. You're all trying to do the same thing. So what is that goal? What is that objective? Let's say in your fintech company, right? You're talking about they want to expand. Maybe they want to start selling in a new market. And so that's the catalyst for that SOC 2 report. Well, if you go into it thinking we just need a SOC 2 report, you've got blinders on. You're looking at it as a compliance project. But if you take that step back and say, oh, our company as a whole wants to move into this new market, what can I do to help meet that goal? And as the GRC professional, yeah, maybe that does mean SOC 2, but maybe it also means evaluating other regulatory requirements in that new region or market. Maybe there's additional threats. You know, we always talk about, you know, the threat of even some natural disasters. You know, from Arizona to DC, our threats and risks are very different. Imagine that multiplied across the world. And so if you focus as the GRC professional on, we just need a SOC 2, you're not really managing and assessing that risk. But if you're focused on, hey, let's identify what compliance requirements we have. Let's look at some of these threats. Do we need to implement new controls to monitor those risks? And then go to your stakeholders early in that process and say, hey, I know you guys want to open in this new market. I know you got this goal of doing it by the end of this quarter, whatever that looks like. Here's a couple of things that I'm thinking we should put in place in order to meet that goal. And now they're like, oh yeah, let's do it. Maybe we need a new data center. Maybe we need this. Maybe we need new vendors. Who knows? But you're phrasing it in a way of, hey, we all want to go towards this goal. This is how I can help you reach your goal. Mm-hmm. And now you're that business enabler. You're not coming in after the fact and saying, well, you guys did this and now we have nonconformities. No, you're a partner and you're moving towards that goal. And so really that's the key as we move into, you know, 2023, as we're reevaluating our processes and how we're assessing risk and compliance, really reassess too, how do you communicate that? How do you get your point across to your board so that you're seen as that partner and not as that naysayer who comes in at the end?
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks for that, Megan. And thanks for joining me today on the podcast. It was really great chatting with you today and look forward to doing it again.
Yes, this was wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cyber Matters, powered by the Cyber Guild. You can follow us on LinkedIn at the Cyber Guild or visit our website, www.cyberguild.org. If you liked this episode, please download and subscribe to our podcast. And check back monthly for more episodes featuring top leaders in cybersecurity.